Welcome, and hopefully welcome back to Conversations with Matthew Bronson on KUPR 99.9 FM in Placitas, New Mexico. Today, we are going to have what I hope over the next several years ends up being a quarterly event, visitors from the Master Gardener Program or people involved in farming and gardening in our neck of the woods. As we know, there are many microclimates in these there hills. So today we have Rod Gaston, who is a novice gardener.
Yep, that is correct. That's an apt description of what I am.
That's what it says on your business card.
That's right. Okay. Novice gardener.
Novice gardener. The path that we're going to try and take today is for those of us who have not gardened here before, but have gardened in the past, or not gardened in the past, how do we grow things to eat here? For those of you who do grow things to eat, how do we do it better? You know, is it plant selection? Is it irrigation? Is it soil preparation? It's probably like the American Heart Association, five lifestyle choices. It's all mm-hmm. those things. It's mm-hmm. just how much, mm-hmm. depending where you're at. Eastern exposure, you know, are there any sunspots coming our way?
Right.
A gamma radiation. And then as well as for people who want to perhaps work cooperatively, and I don't mean get a plot of land and everyone gardens on it, which I guess is a possibility, community gardens, but other ways to work more effectively with your friends and neighbors who want to grow.
Right.
So how's that? Can we do that?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. We could do that.
All right. So let's start with, it is, depending on when you're listening to this, it's almost December 1st.
Okay.
And that would be true no matter where you're listening. If you're streaming in Uzbekistan, it's still near December 1st. It's mm-hmm. not like a different, I don't know if it's hot or cold at this time over there.
Right.
What do Placitans and surrounding Bernalillians and Albuquerqueans do this time of year?
Well, you could do a lot. Certainly mustard greens, ruby shards, spinaches, root vegetables certainly can be grown.
So those are things to grow. What do I need to be able to do that? Can I get a 12-inch flower pot and grow some Swiss chard?
Probably, yeah. You can grow it in most anything. Outdoors, it'll survive this time of year. They're made for the outdoors. They're rugged.
And they'll proliferate? They'll do well?
They'll do well. I've got butter crunch lettuces, butternut lettuce. I planted garlic and shallots probably several weeks ago.
But those are long-term bets.
Those are long-term bets, but you need to start them as the weather gets really cold.
Okay.
Because they take 9 months to develop, so you'll want to harvest them at the end of July, beginning
romantic?
Of August.
Like it's like having a baby.
That's it.
So
just like having a baby.
Exactly. I've never have had one, but I've been around enough to know that it's nothing like having a baby, other than the 9 months. All right, let's finish the greens.
Okay.
Do you start with seed? Well, start with seed. What am I going to plant it in? If I have the ground, is the ground better than a container?
The ground is, it depends on where you are. You know, if you're low down near an acequia, let's say, where the land is flat and you have some nice vegetation and the soil is rich, then yeah, you can certainly do that there.
That's exactly like my piece of property.
I'm thinking about Corrales, an area around here. So
okay.
But where I live, it's not practical. You can't grow anything too well in ground with the soil that's available.
Because I'm going to think that, I mean, Corrales is blessed that way. They've had hundreds of years of natural composting.
Yeah.
I think Placitas might be closer to the suburb of Santa Fe where you're at.
Correct.
Where there is stuff that you walk on. I don't think, I don't know the technical part, but I don't think it's really soil. It's some various forms of rocks.
Right. So let me walk you through this. So
okay.
I uh, my wife had wanted to surprise me for my birthday 1 year.
And this That's was always about, dangerous, Rod.
Yeah, right? And so this was about, around a dozen years ago, let's say. I don't remember exactly. But she hired some guys to lay out this in-ground garden and surrounded it with treated landscape ties. So the land that we're on is very sandy soil, you know, being Rio Grande River Basin soil, which is part clay and mostly sand. It requires a lot of water, and it requires a lot of patience. We planted, started out with some tomatoes, and had moderate success, not too much. But the soil was so bad, the weeds wouldn't even grow there. So I just kind of lost interest.
You didn't amend the soil?
I didn't amend the soil. I tried to, but it would all turn back to sand. So, I would gather the mulch that you'd find at the base of pinon trees, which are little pines around here.
Right.
And juniper. And, you know, it's good black soil, and
right.
You know, it's a little aesthetic, but still mixing it in or layering it on top, well, a good wind or two comes along and all you see is sand. So that's the residue. So it wasn't too encouraging, and it wasn't too exciting for me. So
you
kind
knew something had to change.
I knew something had to change, but before it changed, I kind of lost interest.
Okay.
And gardening, you know, altogether, because I didn't want to stand there with a hose, and I certainly didn't want to be out there when it was a little chillier and the wind blowing in my face and the dust or the sand blowing in my eyes.
I think it's called farming.
Well,
up with the cows.
Yeah, well, not the way I did it. So it was really discouraging.
But you've gotten way past that.
Well, yeah, today I have.
So, but, what happened?
So what happened was...
did you have an epiphany? A vision came to you?
I didn't have an epiphany. I had a couple of friends that were good gardeners. One was fortunate to live near an acequia by some richer soil. And he had a beautiful garden, and he was at it. And he was able to grow things that I've never seen grown around here. And I just thought, you know, not only were we the beneficiaries of some of this food, but just the aesthetic of seeing a beautiful garden on a plot of land, you know, was really encouraging, and I wanted to do that.
It's different than trimmed hedges and topiaries. I mean, those are really, really, really cool. Or even flower gardens that
correct.
Are
correct.
Those are inspiring also.
Yes.
But the fact that all of this, these greens and different colors of vegetables and fruits in front of me, I can eat all of those. I just have a whole different reaction to that at the core of me.
I share that. I share that. You know, not only that, but it's a cycle of life thing. You know,
especially if I grew it.
Yeah, exactly. There's a satisfaction.
It's magical.
There's a satisfaction about it that is magical. You know, that something like this can sprout from a seed. You know, it's just to me, just amazing.
Sometimes from a seed that you can barely see.
Correct. Like the lettuce seeds. Some of the lettuce seeds that you can. Well, I can't even barely hold them. I mean, I just pour them out of a bag and hope the spacing is right. And if not, I just thin them. But
I've seen people put them in like pepper shakers with the bigger holes.
Oh yeah.
But yeah. I watch too much the
and,
TV.
Yeah, there's also a way that you can get a sort of a thicker paper and mix it in with a gel and squirt it out as if you were baking.
In other words,
so that's
all
another technique. Yeah, correct.
Isn't there a poem or from someone's speech where they said, from this tiny seed, a mighty oak tree shall grow?
Or a weed.
Yeah.
It's mighty weed.
Could have been a Bugs Bunny cartoon, knowing my literary history.
Chinese elm, which
grows. Right,
so that was
you want a raised bed?
So that was my, one neighbor,
right.
One friend, but... The other thing that was inspirational was a neighbor of mine that lived up near us, and he was able to have beautiful vegetables growing in several scenarios, and one of which was an enclosed structure. But he was at it all the time. I mean, he did nothing but garden, and it was kind of like his children. And I didn't have that kind of time or patience, really.
Or bankroll. That's what stops a lot of my projects.
Correct. But having an architectural background, I looked at the barriers that were presented to us, and doing something in ground was just not going to cut it. So what I decided and what I thought about for a couple of years before I actually did it was to build raised beds. And so if I was going to do it, I wanted to do it out of some material that was going to be durable. So I chose redwood. So 2 years passed, and I finally started. I bought some materials and started building some raised beds.
From the angle that we're going to encourage a lot of people to do this, mm-hmm. I would think the raised beds are, 30 inches or 24 inches high?
24 inches.
Okay. Why not go down 24 inches? Because then I continue to get the associated tangential water, as well as easier for the worms to crawl horizontally, I don't know, and it keeps it warmer in the winter.
Good question. Let me address that.
Okay.
Out where we live, if you go down 24 inches, you hit rock. Actually, you go down 6 inches, you hit rock.
We're building. We found that out.
So what you want to do is give the roots a chance to spread out. So you want softer, more controlled soil. But we'll get to that.
Okay. So
the raised beds were for two reasons. Number one, I wanted to have control over the quality of soil that was going to go in these beds, because it wasn't going to happen with the indigenous soil. So we
already found that out.
So we trucked soil and manure up from south of Belen and just shoveled it in. But before we did that, there was the critter problem. You know, there are a lot of moles and gophers where we are as well, and rodents. So knowing
little bunnies. Are
little
those,
bunnies.
Those are rodents?
Well, we'll talk about those bunnies. So that's the other barrier, because you would plant something and it would get eaten. You know, I mean, some of those rabbits started developing pouches, you know. So
it's like having a bird feeder.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So so I put some metal stucco lath on the bottom of the beds, which was open to the soil below, to prevent anything from coming up through the bottom.
Metal stucco lath is considerably more industrial mm-hmm. than like chicken wire.
Correct.
And you feel you need hardened steel.
I felt like I wasn't going to take any chances, that if I was going to do this and invest the time and money, I wanted to make sure that I eliminated any chance of failure.
Yeah. I picked up on that, because at one point I wanted to make a hole in a wall that mm-hmm. was exterior. I did not know that metal stucco lath was there, and thought, jigsaw some. I was there for days trying to find the right blades.
Uh-huh.
So I know that stuff is tough.
Yeah. You need a sawzall to get through that. Right.
Or a bunny.
Or a bunny. Yeah. Well, bunnies. Well, see, bunnies won't. They won't chew through it.
Do you go the edge, so as they would burrow down, they would hit that, or do you also do it from the bottom, because moles and stuff will come up from the bottom?
Well, you want to overlap the edge a bit, but bury it. You want to overlap the edge a bit, but bury it.
Okay.
And then on top of that, put weed barrier. To prevent unwanted vegetation
like
from coming
weed
up.
Cloth?
Weed cloth. And then to protect the sides, I used a 6 mil polyethylene, just so the water wouldn't rot it, over a number of years.
Right.
So then you're preparing the bed.
Yeah. If you got the polyethylene over mm-hmm. The redwood, mm-hmm. why would it matter
inside.
What kind of wood would
Well, on the inside. Well, redwood is very durable. and it looks good.
Right.
It looks good. But and if you, that's something I cared about.
Considerably more expensive.
Yeah, it's considerably more expensive, but as a cheaper alternative, you could certainly use Doug fir, which is a lot, you know, less expensive than the redwood, probably about one third the price.
And are we looking at, I can get 10 good years out of it?
Probably. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That's fair. The corners, did you just nail them and miter them together, or did you use metal brackets? We're getting very technical, aren't we?
That's okay. No.
This old garden.
A better technique would be to shiplap the corners so that you have a tight, you have a tight connection between the wood.
I don't know what that is.
And then use brackets on the inside corners.
What's the ship thing?
Shiplap, where you cut half, you kind of bird mouth the structure.
Okay.
So that the boards are fitting into one another. And you just
overlap.
Is it
overlap like a dovetail?
It. Yeah, you just overlap. Well, dovetail is more like fine cabinetry.
Okay.
You know, kind this of a joinery you would use for that. But this is a kind of a rougher...
like a saw,
but a good way to do it instead of just butting it up, because you could have the soil could have outward thrust and you know different forces will cause the wood to pull apart.
So do you have one large raised garden or do you have individual little guys?
Well, myself, I have a U-shaped garden because I wanted to have room in the middle to work and to possibly entertain.
Okay.
So it's a good manageable way to do things. One of the other reasons of having a raised bed, I don't know if I mentioned this, was, you know, it gets very tiring bending all the time, going up and down, even if you do have good soil.
Certainly.
And it's easier to reach things, to the far end of the bed. It's just easier overall on your body because... gardening is exercise. It's work.
Oh, sure.
You know, whether you're weeding or sowing or harvesting or trimming or whatever, it's work.
Absolutely.
And you want to make it easy
on
you. Yeah, it's good work, but you're tired. You know, after a couple of hours of it.
So your particular U-shaped raised bed from either side of the U, you can reach the center plant.
I can reach it.
Okay.
Yes.
And do you know how many cubic feet of dirt you brought in for this?
Oh, how many yards did I have? About, gosh, I calced it. It was about, I don't know, about 15, 18 yards. Because so, I don't. You know, it's not a perfectly flat surface.
Right.
It's on a slope. So
I'm just wondering for people that how many truckloads of dirt was that?
Goodness. Well, there's about, you can't, I can't tell you because there were some pickup trucks, there were some 10-yard deliveries.
So there was a lot of soil.
There was a lot, but it's easy enough to calculate how many cubic yards you need.
But what about your formula of manure, compost?
Yeah, so I did an even mix of manure, compost, organic material to and mixed it all together.
That's a lot of dirt. I'm wondering how you mixed them all little by little.
Well, it comes that way.
I thought you got like three deliveries, aren't they?
Well, they're all mixed.
Oh, it's already pre.
Yeah, it's pre-mixed.
Oh, okay. I thought I was going to have to do all this work.
No, it's pre-mixed.
Oh, so I just give me the 30-30-30.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It's pre-mixed. The only thing you have to worry about with the manure is that horses tend to eat grass.
Right.
And there's a lot of seeds in there. And they eat weeds. Mm-hmm. So
I've heard that about if you buy hay, you got to get clean hay.
So if I had my choice to do it again, I'd probably limit the manure and concentrate more on the organic matter.
Do you still gather
the compost
manure from neighbors?
No, I don't. No. So what I do is I top off.
That's why you're a novice gardener. Once you start collecting manure in your car, you graduate.
No, I'll remain a novice if that's what it takes. Thank you.
I don't blame you.
So what I do is I buy bags of compost and mulch, and I top off what I have probably 2 or 3 inches, you know, after every harvest.
Where does it go?
On top.
No, but why do you keep? It's not. I have a fish tank. I have to add water periodically. Why do I have to keep adding
dirt. Because as you harvest, you're taking up a lot of dirt. You're taking up, you know, the roots carry dirt. You're making holes. So okay. What you want to do is, you know, you want to top it off with some fresh material. Right. That it seems to work.
But like a tomato plant, I usually just buried it after I, you know, when the season was over. I used mm-hmm. to just bury it in the ground.
You could.
Okay.
Or you could throw it to, you can put it in the pile and let the rabbits eat it. Outside of the unit.
Defensive
and that,
gardening.
And that way you're sacrificing something that's not your food.
Right. And I'm helping them survive.
Yep.
Well, that's wonderful. Yep. All right, so this time of year, I could put in collards or all the dark greens as well as lettuces?
This is the first year I've tried to grow a winter garden, and so far it's holding up. I just have, I just drape it with frost cloth on those really, really brutal nights.
Right.
And so far it's surviving.
And you started with seeds.
So it's kind of, yes, when, started with seed.
When did you plant them?
I planted them about, I started planting them about 3-4 weeks ago. And I probably planted my last seeds a couple weeks ago. And I peek under there, or when the weather gets to be in the 30s, near 40, I uncover it for a few hours, and they look fine. I still have carrots that are going well. I have.
Are you reseeding carrots or radishes?
No.
Too late for that.
No, the radishes are, I still have radishes in the ground. They're doing well. They haven't frosted over or anything.
Any other root crops we could start now? Or let me put it this way. It's December 1st. What should we be doing? Growing the greens.
Growing the greens and the root crops, the garlics, the shallots, whatever's going to weather the storms in the winter.
Right.
You know, but forget about the tomatoes and all that.
What about potatoes?
Too cold? I haven't tried potatoes.
I don't know what their season is.
I haven't tried them yet. I don't know. I haven't attempted it. I feel like you can go to the market and buy a whole bag of potatoes, you know, and for relatively cheap.
I figure when I grow tomatoes and I'm not growing it in a larger structure, I calculate time, water, emotional input.
Mm-hmm.
Good beefsteak tomato, I don't know, about $95, you know, of me in that thing.
Right.
So I could go, and it tastes different.
Yeah.
But I could still go buy it.
Right. Well,
you don't think homegrown potatoes taste better than store-bought? I've never had a comparison.
I haven't tried it yet. See, I tried, I kind of feel about potatoes like I feel about corn. So I tried corn for about 3 years,
right.
and I was successful. I was able to grow it, and I grew it in the raised beds. And for the time and the energy that it took to grow a corn stalk, it takes up a lot of nutrients from the soil, and also it prohibits other things from growing around it. And for the yield, for the time and energy, the yield wasn't worth it.
Right.
You know, so
I felt that way about the green zucchini because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they're delicious, but the plant has such a large footprint.
Yes. Yes. Same with squash.
Right.
I'll probably limit. I did a lot of squash, yellow squash, last season, and had to learn how to cook it. I made calabacitas. Which are really good, out of yellow squash. And they turned out fine, but I was the only one that liked it, you know, in the whole family. So what I found was...
better than you being the only one who didn't like it.
So this is yeah, right? So this is part of the novice part of me. So I made the mistake of growing yellow squash next to cucumbers, which I love.
Right.
I can't have enough cucumbers. But the squash overwhelmed the cucumbers. So
yeah, well, they're both so fine. Did you grow up on stakes?
I tried to. I had some metal stakes, and I used some rabbit fencing to try to train the cukes to grow upward.
Right.
But they were outrun by the yellow squash.
Jeez.
And they beat them to the top. So.
Well, you could have had a sacrificial event to thin the herd. On these raised beds that you've put this serious rabbit security around the bottoms, what's going to stop them from just jumping up 2 feet into your raised bed?
Right. Great question.
Claymore mines.
So I made the mistake of buying rabbit mesh from Home Depot, and I used that as my main cover. I did it for two reasons. Right. I thought it would keep the critters out, rabbits and birds out, and number two, and probably equally as important, I wanted to have an open air structure that allowed the rain to come in, because things grow amazingly better, you know, with the natural rain and the nutrients that it brings.
Versus a drip.
Those were the two reasons I wanted to do the rabbit mesh, something that would allow rain to come in. And I thought I had it. I thought I had it all secured. You know, beautiful. I had every single possible hole.
You were airtight.
So you can view the garden from our bathroom, right? So I would get dressed there, and I would see a rabbit on top of the raised bed, and I thought, how in the world did it get up there?
Sure.
So I go up.
He's inside the fence.
I didn't say how in the world. You know, I ran out with a towel around my waist. So I was furious.
See, so, now that's a serious gardener. That's not a novice gardener.
I was upset.
Yeah, so, I can tell.
So I ran out there, and a darn thing chewed like a rectangle. You know, as soon as I approached, I saw where he was getting out, and it was like a perfect rectangle where he chewed through that.
Well, as an architect, you should appreciate his style.
Oh, I didn't appreciate it at all. So,
did he take it all out, or just bend it enough for him to get through?
He just chewed it. He just chewed a rectangle just enough to get his body in, and he was sitting there on top of the bed eating everything. This was several years ago.
It sounds like they eat very quickly.
They eat quickly. Yeah, they're voracious.
So they can clear a 3x3.
You know, if you go. You go to a nursery and you get a perennial, and they'll tell you, you know, this is rabbit proof. Well, that's baloney. If they're hungry enough and the weather is dry, it hasn't rained, they'll eat stuff for the moisture, for the water content as much as anything else.
So we know that rabbit fence really is kind of like dog food.
Correct.
It's for them to eat. Rabbit fence is for rabbits to eat.
Yeah.
What did you ultimately end up with?
So what I decided to do is get some welded, tight-eyed welded wire mesh. And I put that around from the raised bed to the purlin that I had established at 42 inches. And I decided that nothing's going to jump over that. But I needed it tight-eyed because I wanted to keep the rodents out at the same time.
Right. And what's tight-eyed?
Tight-eyed, like a tight hole. Probably like.
I'm thinking like I'm back with Jimi Hendrix like, with tie-dyed mesh.
Not like the Grateful Dead or anything. It's tight, like tight. I don't know how to describe it. But
tight-eyed, like EYED.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
So I put that around and had more luck, but was still getting mice in. So.
They're small. Can't they go through the size of a nickel?
They're small because I didn't have a secure enough door. So, and I couldn't grow a beet because the mice would chew up the roots. You know, I'm just telling you all my mistakes here.
I want to zero in on the prize. What do I use?
Okay.
Is what we're going to find out in just a moment after we let everyone know that this is Conversations with Matthew Bronson on KUPR 99.9 FM in the high desert of Placidas. All right, so we know what doesn't work. What works?
What works is trying to get everything as tight as possible. So
we don't have the seams? Or
Well, they're getting in through the door. Clearly they were getting in through the door because I had sealed off everything on all sides but the door. That was the weak link. All I had was kind of a netting hatch.
Right.
So I decided I was going to buy more mesh and then double trim it with the redwood. And so I built a door that actually was hinged and can latch. And I put in some door stops out of wood, one by material, where a rodent would have a hard time squeezing through. Right. And this past summer, I had a huge beet garden. Huge. Learned how to make beet salads as a byproduct of having so many beets.
I love beets.
I love beets too.
roasted beets.
Oh, delicious.
Wonderful.
Yes.
I still have a beet stain on a pair of slacks because
all right,
they are nasty, and Tide Stick doesn't work, just in case you're wondering.
Okay.
So this large U-shaped raised bed, what do you think the whole price of admission is, not counting the dirt maybe, but the ballpark, the whole thing?
Well, it depends. I thought about, mine is around 12 feet by 20 feet long.
Okay.
And
so there are two sides of that?
Excuse me?
There are two sides of that if it's U-shaped, or the whole thing is 12 by?
No, the whole thing, the whole rectangle is 12 by 20.
Okay, with a cutout in the center for entertaining.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, for working.
Okay.
For, you know, moving around, right. Working, a wheelbarrow perhaps, you know, getting bags of soil in there to top off.
Right.
Just general work.
So you've got 2 5 by 20 runs?
Correct. Well, 4 by 20. They're 4 feet wide.
Okay. Yep. About, so that's 80 square feet. That's...
Yeah. Well,
That's 160 square feet if you have two of them.
Let's see.
4 by 20?
It's about 230 square feet.
All right.
About 235. So something like that.
That's a considerable garden.
Yeah, it's a considerable garden.
Would you say that's above residential?
I don't know. You know, I did something that would fit my needs. I built something that would provide me with as much gardening as I wanted to do. But people are different. You know, people have different time constraints. People have different levels of interest in gardening.
Right.
And so what I decided was that if I were going to make a kit, I would do it my size and have one smaller, say a 9 by 12.
Because there are obviously options. 12 by 20, to me, is now, we're talking possible greenhouse.
Yes.
If I have that many square feet, how do I want to garden it?
Okay.
Do I want 3 by 3 beds to be able to get around and more manageable? I don't know if you can still lean over and get to it. I guess that's a design issue. Or do I want to go with a high tunnel or a greenhouse or a hoop house, which may all be the same thing? Did you eventually go to something like that?
Yes. So the next decision after the beds were built was how was I going to cover it? Which I realized that we jumped ahead a little bit, but there was the issue of,
right.
And I considered using little hoops to just simply went on hinges just to simply lift up and
right
and use and what I decided was it was going to be a lot of labor and a lot of cost and maintenance to be able to do this, a lot of hinges, a lot of possible deterioration of metal, you know, unless I use galvanized materials
and wouldn't PVC
PVC PVC tends to crack.
Well,
with the heat and the cold.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to do that. I wanted to use something sturdier. So what I decided was that, you know, wouldn't it be a lot cooler to just walk into the place where I was going to garden? So in essence, it did become a hoop house that I can walk in. And, you know, we can call it a greenhouse.
Right.
Which could be covered by a variety of things.
Depending on the season.
If you wanted to make it a four-season project of gardening.
Just go down there in the middle of winter when it's 65 and 40% humidity inside the hoop house.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go into any nursery, that's what they have. You know, you go in and the humidity is very high. And some use double-layered material, and they have several squirrel fans that will create an airspace, which in building, as we know, will sustain the warmth of the winter sunlight and not let it escape very quickly. So polycarbonate's another option, more expensive one, but still doable.
You could kind of lease it out as a day spa. Just let people come in and sit. Or a meditation center.
Yeah.
You know, take one section corner in the back and put a little jing-jing music going on.
I hadn't thought of that.
Well, there you go. I unfortunately think of those things all the time.
All right.
All right. I have some land, various parts of the Placidus area, because some are have good soil, some have water, some have various forms of sizes of rock and dirt. So you would think that even if I'm doing in-ground gardening now, I should move to raised bed?
I like it because you can control.
But you got the rodent issue
you got, beat. You got the rodent issue beat. And also, by the way, had the water issue beat, because the last thing I wanted to do was stand there with a hose.
Right.
So there's an automatic drip in there, too, which is programmable. Okay. And a three-season unit. You know, of course, you have to shut it off.
So even, you know, if you're just doing your typical hobby gardener, you know, I am. I'm here, I'm alive, let me do something. I'll grow tomatoes and cucumbers and lettuce and stuff like that. So 3x6 should probably be enough, because you can grow your radishes and carrots below that.
Yeah.
Not a lot of work, not a lot of expense to get that going.
Yeah.
And you would say upgrade from in the ground to that.
Yeah. And if you wanted to expand on your 3x6, you can always do that. Why
not? Get another one. You get a 3x3.
Or build onto it. Design it so that you can build onto it, you know, and just so that you're not wasting materials.
But it really is, it sounds, and I'm making the assumption that the skill set that I think it takes is not that. You don't got to be a carpenter. If you're reasonably intelligent, you can go to the home store, buy it, put it together, have someone deliver a load of dirt. Hook up the drip. It's it is a DIY project.
It can be a DIY project. What I've tried to do is make it. So what I decided was I'm going to garden no matter what. But what if I were to make it? What if I were to make it a business? What if I were to design a kit that all somebody needed was a cordless drill, let's say,
right?
To put it together. You know, how would that work out? Because
can't they use a wired drill? It has to be cordless.
No. I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying if your unit's not anywhere near any power, you know, you're kind of out there where you want to build it a little ways from your house, you know, and you don't happen to have a 200-foot extension cord.
who doesn't?
Right? Crazy.
I got two. okay.
You know.
And did you do that? You made a kit?
So I did make a kit. I made a kit, and so what I'm doing right now is I'm in the process of pricing it, and what I'd like to do is kind of discover the range, you know, at which people would actually buy one. So my point. Oh, yes. So anyway, yeah, so I sat in at a couple of growers' markets, and I had a small exhibit and a display, you know.
Up at the Santa Fe growers' market?
I went down to Los Ranchos, actually, because I wanted to go around. I wanted to be around properties that were a little bigger and people that you know, it's kind of agrarian down there.
Oh, yeah.
And so
I go down to the rail yards when in season and talk to all the organic gardeners. It's like, you people have such a better soul than I do, that you can spend all day doing this.
Right.
And you're totally, totally happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they are. I mean, it's a great life. But anyway, I set it up, and I went there sat there for a couple of Saturdays, and there was a lot of interest. People all thought it was beautiful and all that, and nobody bought it because I had priced myself out.
Is it the price?
Yeah.
Or is it like?
I think it was the price.
You don't think it's like a car? I got a car. I don't need another car right now. It's timing.
It could be timing, but there was a lot of interest, and sure, you know, we talked gardening a little bit and talked about the benefits of having something like this, but at the end of the day, people were not willing to spend what I had, so I decided, you know, I need to go back to the drawing board and figure this out. And
well, yeah, there's, I guess, if you look at the various companies where you can mail order kits or places around here where you can have a greenhouse or a high tunnel made.
Yes.
You got to be in their price point.
You got, well.
Unless it's incredibly different.
Well, that's what I wanted to create. And see, my needs were different than my knees just didn't fit all those scenarios because I went online and I looked at these websites, Grower Supply, Farm Tech, Greenhouse Supply. They have an incredible array of product. They have hoop houses. They have different skins.
Right.
They have different watering systems.
I've even seen geodesic dome greenhouses now in the house area.
Absolutely. Geodesic dome greenhouses, very structural. You know, all great stuff. But there was nothing like what I wanted. There was nothing with raised beds. There was nothing. Nobody had bothered putting it together. So I think the difference maker here, the value proposition here is that what I had was a different way of buying a kit.
Okay.
In other words, you don't have to be terribly knowledgeable to leaf through these catalogs or go online and see these multiple options or get on all these web pages and understand what all these things are. So what I wanted to do is consolidate and simplify and make it easy for somebody to just have and address all their needs, you know, in one place. Raised beds. I didn't see one thing with raised beds.
Right. But your needs, you wanted to create something that the raised bed was already there. Can't you take a normal hoop house, say it's, I don't know, 10 by 20, can't I put a raised bed in the center that is 6 by 15 and walk around the perimeter of it?
You know, you could. But what I wanted to create was a little different. I wanted to have a contiguous structure, one that where the hoops were connected to the boxes themselves.
Right.
Because you have a lot of bad wind uplift around here. So the advantage of doing it this way is that the soil acts as ballast to keep the to keep the raised beds down and keep the structure in place.
You're strapping your roof to wood instead of burying it in the ground.
Correct.
So you've got like one huge footer.
Also, you know, you have a movable structure that way. Whereas if you're taking your typical hoop house online, you know, you're burying it in footers.
Right.
Using concrete, perhaps.
The covering is movable. The raised bed probably is not so movable.
Well, the raised bed can be taken apart.
Right, but then you'd have to relocate.
But then you relocate
all that dirt.
Correct.
That's
correct.
That's not fun to me.
Well, but if you move somewhere, theoretically, you could take it with you.
Earlier, before we started this, you mentioned barriers to good design.
Mm-hmm.
What did you mean by that?
Barriers to good design are the limitations that you're facing with any kind of design. You can't design without limitations. If you're talking about gardening, you're talking about the wind, you're talking about the snow, you're talking about poor soil, pests, you're talking about the lack of water.
Some things I can address directly.
Mm-hmm.
Some I can attempt to either maximize the benefit of or reduce the risk of, but some I can't do anything about.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you overcome the barriers?
By using materials that will address those barriers. And you could tell if they're working or not by the success or failure of your garden.
That'll
tell you. You know, too, knowledge doesn't hurt either. You know, it's not all about that. It's timing. You know, what I've learned over the years is that timing is everything in gardening. Knowing when to move your transplants outdoors. A good case in point, you know, maybe broccoli, for example, or stuff that you need to propagate and you need to put in the ground, say, a month before the last frost, so that you're giving yourself every chance, you're giving the season long enough to help these plants
develop. That's if I'm going to grow it outside.
Yes.
If you had a choice with your broccoli would you grow it in the hoop house or would you grow it outside? Or doesn't make any difference?
Doesn't make a difference because the hoop house is outside.
Right. Yeah. When do I put my broccoli seed in the ground?
You put it in a month before the last frost. That's what I tried.
You actually put it in the ground as opposed to have a nursery inside the house.
Right. Some stuff will work
okay
that way and some won't. I tried it that way in years past and it didn't work out.
Sure. And there are classes around. New Mexico State and the county all have wonderful agricultural, like the Master Gardener program that you're working with.
Correct. Yes. I'm entering the Master Gardener program in January. This is the Sandoval County Master Gardener program because I think for my own interest, it behooves me to learn more about what I'm doing.
And their website is just thick with information you're just a hobby gardener.
It is. It is.
And you can be a better hobby gardener if you follow some of what Rod has said. Let's go to the bigger picture.
You,
with the amount of space you have, hopefully, in a good year, you're growing way more than you and your family can consume.
Correct.
And you said your neighbor was a very good gardener.
Very good.
Has anyone ever said, Rod, your soil is much better for carrots than mine. You grow the carrots, I'll grow the Swiss chard. Kind of a sign, and you could have 3, 4, 5 people that grow, and your potatoes, your strawberries, your cucumbers. Is that just ridiculous?
Yeah, it really doesn't happen. That doesn't happen.
All right, another great idea down the toilet.
Because it just doesn't. It hasn't happened yet. I'm not saying that it won't.
How about a neighbor who is at the same point in their gardening career as me or you or whomever, you know, Placetan X? They could kind of share a hoop house greenhouse or just a raised garden kind of on their property line, put half on half, and say, we'll take turns or work together if they're friends, go down with a glass of wine or something and just weed and talk.
Yeah, I think, you know, it happens more in higher density areas where they have common open space.
I know city gardens are
city gardeners are very prolific.
In some of the worst neighborhoods, and it's such a wonderful thing.
Correct. Yeah, and I know of shopping centers that are using common open space to invite people that are not fortunate enough to have the land to garden to come over there and do what they can. So, you know, it's a new and developing concept that's very exciting. Now, I've talked to farm to school people, and that's something I may get involved in early next year.
I think that's a wonderful thing too.
Yeah, because it's educational and it's great for kids to learn that
most places
and appreciate.
You know, even harsh climates like Alaska, they do have a growing season.
Mm-hmm.
Most schools have land.
Right.
Make it a class.
Yes, and make it a class. No better way to learn by doing.
Reduce their food costs.
Yep.
How interesting.
Yeah.
So, again, you told us a lot of the benefit of your blood, sweat, and tears, and probably all of that, and a lot of Vicks VapoRub for muscles.
Yes.
What are the three worst things to grow here that people go, I'm got a house, I'm going to grow, and it's like it's never going to happen.
Avocados.
Really? even in the greenhouse?
I haven't tried. I don't know.
Okay.
But that's the beauty of it, you know, because I'm going to continue to experiment and see what the limits are. Mm-hmm.
Well, like you mentioned Los Ranchos and Corrales, they can grow things down there totally different than we grow up here because the altitude and different temperature.
Yeah, and much more so in Santa Fe because Santa Fe's, I don't know, hot season would seem to be about 3.5 months, something like that. You know, I mean,
brutal hot.
Easy season. Right. It's only brutal hot for 2 weeks, really, but easy season, about 3.5. Now, I've extended
what does easy season mean?
Well, I mean, it's where you get rain, where you
get... Oh, it's prime, okay.
It's just prime. Now, okay. I've extended the growing season for myself to, I don't know, about 8 or 9 months so far. And I'm going to see, you know, this winter crop is largely experimental.
Right.
So I'm going to see if I can extend it to 12 months without using more expensive materials to cover it. Right now, I'm just covering with frost cloth.
Okay,
and
working.
Seeing how it works out. So right. far it is, but so, it may not.
Well, yeah. Rod Gaston, I think we were successful in motivating people that hear this and see this.
I hope so.
I know we went all over the place, but still stayed about gardening and
right.
do it at home.
I still didn't give you the three crops that can't be grown here.
You said you didn't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to give you a pass on that.
Okay, thank you.
there's always the internet.
All right.
And it might be different. Like I've been told I can't grow raspberries at my elevation, but blackberries are okay.
Mm, yeah.
And other people have told me the opposite. Yeah. So I think I need to do like what you did, buy a plant or bag of seeds. We also have the seed exchange here, which is a great program. Mm. And if it grows, it grows. If it doesn't, we put that on the list.
Right. That's the fun of it. You know, bushes are a different thing.
Right.
You know, nuts and berries.
And droops.
That's a different animal.
Right.
Haven't and tried those yet.
Well, we're going to be getting someone from the Sandoval County Extension Office or the Master Garden to talk about edible trees and nuts and droops. And so we'll address that also.
Great.
So, yeah. Well... Rod Gaston, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, Matthew.
And, I do want to say that the thing that you are kind of creating is called a Mud Hub, M-U-D-H-U-B.
Mud Hub is the name of the company. Right. And what I'm trying to create are the enchanted greenhouses.
Right.
So we've got two size kits, and we'll see how it goes.
So if you're interested, search out Mud Hub. I guess because or PBS, mm-hmm. or I don't know what the rules all are. I don't want to make an infomercial. I think it's interesting. So for Conversations with Matthew Bronson on KUPR 99.9 FM in the high desert of Placitas and ABQLive.tv, this is Matthew Bronson. See you next time.